Now, when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'm just still really giddy almost from the list of distinguished co-hosting guests we have on tonight. I really am just flattered and honored. I can't believe that God has blessed me to be able to be around such great people. If you're just tuning in, we had Don Black, who is a warrior. We didn't get to touch hardly anything he'd done. The man has done prison time for trying to capture an island. I think he was a special forces in the Army. We didn't get to cover hardly any of that, but we'll get him on probably for 2 hours next time with Don Wassel. I want to start this month honoring people that we have. I don't even call it a movement. I don't know what you'd call it, but just great legendary warriors. Anyway, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 5 on tonight. We certainly do. We had Don Wassel and Don Black. I can't say enough about them. Don Wassel is a wonderful guy. Don Black's one of the few people I still respect in the world. I don't have heroes like I used to. We have Monica Schaefer. You can't say too much about Monica. Another legend, another hero. Paul Fromm. I mean, Paul Fromm, he's in a class by himself. They're on this hour here. I'll just be bringing them out in and out of the breaks. I'm going to get the hell out of their way. I don't want to impede them at all. We'll have Gene Andrews on. I mean, who doesn't know about Gene? I mean, Vietnam veteran, Marine. He's saw the light, and he despises that Yankee flag like I do now. But what legends, man. God bless them all for coming on. And with that, Miss Sister Monica is my precious little sister. I'd do anything for her. I love her like a biological sister. I love Paul Fromm like a biological brother. I really and truly do. I hope no one ever doubts that. And if you want to find out how serious I am about that, just screw with these people we're talking about. And if you get them, you're going to have to come over me. I guarantee double damn to you. Well, people, we got my sister Monica has a great, well, it's not a great story. It's a sad story. It's an infuriating story. It's a historically accurate stuff. We've been talking about this crap forever. And we've been talking about what George Orwell talked about. Sister Monica is going to cover it. Brother Paul Fromm is going to come. They're going to take it. I'm going to get the hell out of their way. Sister Monica, God bless you. I'm so glad you could come in. I'm so glad you could come on and let our people, our family, the Blood River Radio family know just what the hell's going on, just how these people are screwing with you and your family. So go ahead, Sister Monica.
Okay, thank you. You really are a wonderful host and the most gracious, you know, man around, and you make us all feel really good. Thanks, Eddie. There's a reason why we like to come on to your show, because you are the real deal. You're the real thing. You've been around the block a time or two yourself. So thank you very much for all that you have done and continue to do.
Well, okay, God bless you. So thank you so much.
Today I am going to tell you this is a new story that has come at us in my family. Now, you say that, yeah, I've been talking about this stuff a lot. Yes, I've been talking about this stuff a lot, but what happened 5 days ago just absolutely was like a slug in the gut for myself and for my other family members, and I'm going to tell you about it because this actually relates to the war we are in, and now it has come home to our family. So it has to do with my father, and I don't think I've told you very much about my father. His name was Dr. Otto Schaefer. Although he was a very humble man, and after he retired, after he officially retired, if somebody addressed him with Dr. Schaefer, he would always say, "Oh, no, 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 don't call me that. I'm not a doctor anymore." Like, he was very, very humble. Didn't like to, you know, wear a title that wasn't applicable anymore. But that's far from the truth, because he, yeah. And you know, he's not a present-day doctor, because most of the doctors present-day, if they went along with the COVID stuff, that's really, really bad news. So he was born in 1919, and he died in 2009 at the age of 90. He was, well, first of all, I should say, he came to Canada from Germany. The whole reason that he came to Canada was because when he was a child, he received a book from his brother, gave him a book as a present, and it was all about the Eskimos. And it fascinated him to no end, and it was his lifelong dream to go to the Eskimos. Now, I use that term deliberately. I know that nowadays some people say it's politically incorrect to use the term Eskimo. And that's just that out-group that always tells us what we can and can't say, that has made certain words, you know, oh, you can't say this anymore, you can't say that anymore. That is nonsense. Eskimo simply means raw meat eater, which they did that. They ate raw meat as part of what they ate. Anyway, so he did fulfill his lifelong dream. He came over to Canada in 1951. And my mother followed. They had gotten engaged in Germany. They met and got engaged in Germany. She followed a year later. So my parents are both from Germany, and then they had their family here. Now, they spent, because I wasn't born yet during the years that they actually lived in the Arctic, although when I was a toddler, our family did move back north, but not nearly as far north as they had been before. It was almost the deep south of the north, that was in Whitehorse. So I did spend a couple of years as a very young child in Whitehorse myself. But before that, in the 50s, the family lived in Aklavik first, in very far north, and then on Baffin Island in a little village called Pengnertung. And subsequent, after the family moved to Edmonton, and then, you know, I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. My dad was always going up north for months at a time, and he worked in Edmonton. When he was in Edmonton, he was working at the Charles Camsell Hospital, and that was actually a hospital for the patients that were evacuated out of the north, for example, with tuberculosis and that kind of thing. And so, yes, there were hospitals. They were like Indian hospitals, you could say. That's what they were called. And this was the Charles Camsell Hospital. Now, my dad was the director of what they called the Northern Medical Research Unit. He was always a very curious man, and he would want to check out why is this way and why is that way, or, you know, old wives' tales. And he thought, what is it that they, you know, the local people here, they have these tales and whatnot, like, I want to see what is it that causes this old wives' tale. And he would do, you know, scientific research, which meant doing epidemiological studies, so that's observation studies. Some of the studies he did require that, you know, like blood sample, but who hasn't ever had a blood sample taken for anything, if you ever, you know, go to the hospital or whatever. But so there were, he did that. Now, he also was very much always advocating for the native people. In fact, a lot of stress. He was very stressed a lot of times because he was constantly fighting with his boss being the deputy minister of the Department of Indian and Northern Affairs. So basically the government of Canada, Ottawa. He was always fighting with them. And why was he fighting with them? Because he was advocating for the well-being of the native people. He dedicated his entire life's work to the health and well-being of the Eskimos, the Indians, you know, the Eskimos, they call them Inuit nowadays. That is my father. He was always advocating for them. And when he saw things that were going on that he thought, well, that's wrong, this is wrong, that's not right, I'm going to fight for them, you know, I'm going to advocate for them. So can you imagine my surprise Tuesday, just this past Tuesday, May 12th, I was driving home and I had my car radio on, CBC Radio, and there was this program called Ideas. It's a program that's run for decades. In fact, my father was a guest on the Ideas program decades ago as the esteemed guest, you see. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm driving home, I'm in a good mood, I've just played music with some friends, and all of a sudden I hear my father's name. And I just remind you, he's been gone since 2009. I hear Otto Schaefer, I think, wow, that's unusual. There's, you know, Schaefer is common, but not Otto Schaefer. And then in the next moments, I'm hearing, you know, Edmonton and Charles Campbell Hospital. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, they're talking about my dad. And then I hear the words being spoken. Oh,
Sister Mark, we have to go to a break.
Oh, we're getting going for the break. Okay, I'll continue after. Oh,
yes, do not lose your place. I know you want to. Be right back, folks. Don't go far.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Are you watching what's happening in our country and asking, what can I do? Join the John Birch Society in Salt Lake City, June 6th, for a powerful one-day conference. The day includes a host of respected speakers, 2 meals, and meaningful connections. You'll gain clarity on the issues and walk away with practical steps you can take to your community. Reserve your seat today at jbs.org/SLC26. That's jbs.org/SLC26.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go right back to my little sister, Monica Schaefer. Is she going to tell you just how damn Orwellian screwed up that these men that wear tiny little hats are? Go ahead, Sister Monica.
Okay, I'm going to just carry on here. And first, I'll just say that I'm really glad that Paul Fromm is on this program with us today, because Wednesday, after I listened to this program Tuesday night, and I'll just tell you the crux of it here momentarily, but I was steaming mad, and I hardly slept a wink that night. And then the next day, I just needed to call somebody, and I called Paul, and oh, I was just so steaming mad. You had to peel me off the ceiling. And so Paul got the brunt of, you know, my rant about this episode. So I'll just carry on what happened here. So I am listening to the last few minutes of this program, Ideas. Literally, it was just the last few minutes, but I'm realizing in this moment that they are connecting my father, making up stuff, saying that he was doing medical experiments. They kept using that word experiments. Now, experiments is a very different word from research. Okay,
yes.
So
yes.
Experiments, it kind of invokes something, right? We all have this thing, this image coming to mind of, you know, Siamese twins being sewn together or whatever. No, the twins being sewn together, that kind of thing, right? Anyway, so this is what I'm hearing. And then when I got home, I looked for it online, because you can find the archives of these radio programs online. And I listened to the rest of it, and I was flabbergasted because there were so many distortions and lies. And then when I steamed off in Paul's ear the next day, Paul was the one who, before I even mentioned something about Germany, he was the one who just quietly and calmly said, well, I wonder if they're going after him because he's German. And I said, well, there was that spoken, he was spot on that it was easy to go after him because the woman who wrote this book called Oblivious, and she was being interviewed on this radio show that I listened to, she said, oh, when she saw the name, all her red flags went up, and she did the research and saw that he had studied in Heidelberg, Germany, like, and then she did the research and found out, oh, that was the most Nazified of all the universities in Germany, and, you know, if you can even, you know, get more Nazi, like, it was just the most Nazified, and that's saying a lot, she says. So anyway, there's a whole bunch more to this story, and I would like to talk more about it, but I'll just let Paul drop in for a comment if he likes, otherwise I'll carry on.
Go ahead, Paul. Yeah.
Well, when I heard the story, I thought this is a typical German bashing, and this is something that you know, my circle of people up here in Canada have been campaigning about for, you know, the better part of 20 years, that the Germans are used as a punching bag. Even you know, in this case of Monica's father, and he was a child during World War II, so nothing to do with World War II, but he's German. Now that he's dead and he can't sue, they're just making up vile stories about him and so comparing him to Dr. Mengele, and Mengele may not have done the things that were the field.
Well, for sure he didn't.
But it's just using the Germans as punching bags and just a long string of libels. And, you know, this is something, you know, a number of us are fighting back against this organization Monica is involved with, and I'm on the board of directors, Truth and Justice for Germans. You know, we're fed up with this, and I think you know, we've got to take an emotional approach to these things, you know, because so many people don't function rationally; they function emotionally. Well, call it what it is. This is just German bashing, character assassination of a man who can't speak up, who can't defend himself. It's outrageous, and it's outrageous that it's on our communist broadcasting corporation. I mean, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah, exactly. I do call it that too, Paul, Communist Broadcast Corporation. But I'll just go deeper into this, because in this case, this is actually part of this war against our people in Canada, instrumentalizing the, well, do you want to call it plight of the native people? Or we could say, you know, there's a lot of fabrications being created about the Aboriginal people in Canada. And so it was very convenient that the director of the Northern Medical Research Unit of the Department of National Health and Welfare Canada was this Dr. Otto Schaefer, who happened to be born in Germany and then studied in Germany. Actually, he was studying starting in the late 30s, he studied to get his medical degree and was interspersing between semesters at the university, going to the front as a medic in the war, during the war. So he was not a child during World War II. He was well grown up. He was born in 1919. Okay, so in this case, I just need to tell you something. They tried to start this narrative a few years back at the Charles Camsel Hospital. There were rumors circulating, and I had, you know, a Facebook friend prodding me on in public comments saying, oh, didn't your dad work there? And they did medical experiments there in the 60s and 70s. And didn't your dad work there? He was working at the Charles Campbell Hospital. And there's bodies buried in on the grounds of the Charles Campbell Hospital. And I write back to this guy. And I'm saying, what are you talking about? I haven't got a clue. Because he was asking me directly, did your father participate in these medical experiments? And I'm like completely flabbergasted by what he was saying. I hadn't heard these rumors yet about these medical experiments and bodies in the yard. Well, guess what came of that? The reason nobody's really heard about that story is because it quietly went away. And I'll tell you why it quietly died and just went away. It's because that is no longer a hospital there, the Charles Campbell, what used to be a hospital. It is owned by a private developer, I guess you could say, and he was going to maybe develop it into condos or something. And then when these rumors were circulating, this man did the right thing. He had to use his own dime because the government wasn't paying. Unlike at Kamloops, where the government has paid $12.1 million to the native band there to do the digging of those 215 unmarked graves that they told us they found of children buried in behind the school there. And they didn't do any digging. Where did the money go? But in this case, in Edmonton, the Charles Campbell Hospital, well, because it wasn't a residential school, it had been a hospital, this guy didn't get any government money, but he did the right thing. He spent his own dime, and $250,000 worth of his own dime, to get it excavated. Excavate these grounds, and let's look for those bones, okay? What did he find? Eddie, can you guess what he found?
No bones.
He found nothing. Yes, exactly. Yes. Nothing. Nada. Zilch. No bones. Maybe some tree roots or something. I don't know. Anyway, so that story quietly just went away. Now, why didn't the media tell us, oh, thank goodness, they didn't find any bones. We were mistaken. No. It just quietly goes away. So this story, they've been trying to get this going for a few years. Now this woman, Elaine Duar, she wrote a book called Oblivious, and then she died by medical assistance last September. And I think they said it several times during that 1 hour program. I think they're very proud of this medical assistance in dying program in Canada, the MAID program. So they had to pump that out there unnecessarily. Why did they have to pump that? I think I'm taking count. I'm listening to the whole program again and taking notes carefully. And I think they said it at least three times in the show. Anyway, so, they interviewed her just a few days before she died. And they also interviewed some other people. And so this thing about medical experiments she kept using that word experiment. Why? When somebody does research, that does not mean medical experiments. And I'm telling you, there were the most ridiculous statements made from her about her complaints about, you know, my father's work. For example, she said, oh, he was involved in this, you know, program to supposedly get their consent, but everybody knows his Inuktitut was terrible, and so nobody could understand what he was saying. So it wasn't by consent, it was by coercion. How does she know that? Actually, my father worked very hard on learning the Inuktitut language, and he was actually pretty darn good at it. But I know what she used against him, because she made a comment, something about, oh, when he was talking, everybody, whatever language he was talking in, they all thought he was speaking German. Well, my father was very humble, and I remember the story that he told our family, and it was like a self-deprecating joke about himself. You know, he was so humble. And he said, well, he was giving a talk in French. Actually, he was multilingual, and he also had French. And he was giving a talk in French, and at the very beginning, he apologized for his, you know, less than optimal French. And then one of his colleagues just jokingly made a remark and said, oh, Otto, that's okay. Whenever it sounds German all the time anyway. And I'm sure he had written that down because he took meticulous journals. He made notes about everything. And we, the family, donated all his papers his studies, his slides as well, to the University of Alberta after his death. Why would we have done that if there was something to hide? So this woman went there and researched all this stuff. So she would have found that note, something about, oh, we all thought you were talking German anyway, but it was like a joke, right? At his Inuk, so she's making it up as she goes along, says there was no consent. In fact, my father was absolutely livid when he did find that things were going on in some of the hospitals that he thought were done with coercion, and he was instrumental in making sure that there was informed consent with anything that was done with the people, the Inuit people and the Indian people. So he was actually the one who was fighting for doing the right thing, and there he was being accused in this radio program on Tuesday night for, oh, he just was, you know, said it was consent, but it was coercion. I was sickened. I was sickened because I know my father, and I have to say, I've had contact, you know, with my brother and sister, the ones that we haven't talked much in recent years.
It's the latest twist in a partisan redistricting frenzy that kicked off last year, now supercharged by a Louisiana case in which the Supreme Court weakened the Voting Rights Act. Jennifer King, Washington.
North America's largest commuter railroad grinds to a halt, shut down by a strike. The Long Island Railroad normally serves hundreds of thousands of commuters. Kevin Sexton is with the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, says compromise simply was not in the car.
We were negotiating. We were willing to move down a little bit, but there's a far distance. Again, when I say the Presidential Emergency Board, there was a recommendation, there was two recommendations, and they came down, they started at 3%, whereas the Presidential Emergency Board 253 was 4.5%, and 254 was 5%.
MTA management says a strike isn't good for anyone, labor management or commuters. And New York Governor Kathy Hochul is urging affected commuters to work from home if they can. An air of uncertainty, even anxiety, in Taiwan as President Trump mulls whether to greenlight a $14 billion arms package for the self-governed island democracy and longtime U.S. ally. Mr. Trump has suggested that the fate of the arms deal depends on China. Beijing insists Taiwan must be united with the mainland. More on these stories, townhall.com.
We all hear the radio ads about the IRS. They tell you to be afraid, to be scared, and they try to frighten you into calling. I'm not here to do that. Tax Relief Advocates is different. TRA is here to tell you that if you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $500,000, we have a solution. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in your car, at work, or with your kids, no matter where you are, call now. 800-575-6745. Don't lose hope. TRA can eliminate or reduce what you owe to the IRS. Generous programs are now available that can give you a fresh start. Our passion is taxes and helping individuals fix their IRS problems. We have over 1,000 five-star reviews on Google and an A-plus with the Better Business Bureau. You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. End your tax nightmare today by visiting us online at TRA.com or call 800-575-6745. That's 800-575-6745. Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the Hard Genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some man you just can't reach.
Hey, Blood River Radio family, we would like to get the Sister Monica has a lot of great articles. She has an article about her what's happened to her dad on the truth and justice for German society.
Well,
Sister
no,
Monica,
I'll just correct you on
there.
That, if I may. If I didn't write about my dad on the truth and justice for Germans. .com website, but while we're speaking of it, please, folks, go to the truthandjusticeforgermans.com website. That's all written out, all one word, all spelled out, I should say, truthandjusticeforgermans.com. But on my own website, freespeechmonica.com, and Monica with a K, if you just scroll till you find the article that has a thumbnail image of sled dogs in the north, open that article. It's a very quick read, and that I wrote that a while ago. It was when the Canadian government made an apology. You know, they're constantly making apologies, and Paul Fromm knows all about that because they've been doing this for over 100 years now, making apologies. Well, maybe not over 100 years, but, you know, the Canadian government is constantly apologizing to this group and that group that supposedly they wronged. And with that apology came $45 million, I believe it was, to the Inuit people, those that I've been referring to as Eskimos, for the, this is what they said, for the slaughter of their sled dogs in the 60s and 70s, the 1960s and 70s. Now, I perked up when I heard that because, or my ears perked up, I should say, because I know something about life in the North during the 60s and 70s, from all the family stories and from my father. And I wrote an article there, and I think it, you know, I would encourage people to go read that. In a nutshell, my father, one of the things he did there was, I mean, he sewed up many people who had been injured, but there had been a toddler that had gotten too close to one of the sled dogs. Now, these sled dogs are kind of like, they're not like pets that you would have in your house. They're kind of half wild, but they're, you know, they're good for the purpose of pulling sleds across the tundra in the Arctic. And anyway, this toddler got a little close to one of these sled dogs. I don't know if it had gotten loose or if a toddler walked over to where it was tied, whatever. The sled dog mauled this child badly. The child did not die. My father probably needed to put in about several dozen stitches, all the face, the skull, it was all over the head. And the child did well. The child survived and did well. And the scars weren't too bad. There were, of course, some permanent scars, as you can imagine, if it's that bad. But it was really good. Now, when I read that story or heard the story from the CBC radio about the apologies made to the Inuit and the money doled out for the slaughter of sled dogs, I asked the question in my article, I wonder if that particular dog that had mauled that toddler was one of the dogs that was shot, and they're counting that as one of the slaughtered sled dogs. Because what was happening at that time, and this is important.
Excellent question.
This is really important. The people were buying skidoos. They were buying, the Skidoo is a trade name, but snowmobiles, because it was just seemed easier to them to go around with snowmobiles and rifles than with their old sled dogs and harpoons or with, you know, their technology that they used to have. They were modernizing. And I remember my father was always telling us how he was encouraging them to stick with their sled dogs. You know why? If you're out there and you get caught in a blizzard and you have to hunker down for a week, You cannot eat a skidoo, but you could eat one of your sled dogs if you are starving, or you could actually save your hands from frostbite if you are really desperate and, you know, if you need to eat, and you could also warm your hands in the warm belly of a sled dog. You know, this kind of thing, like the skidoo can break down at minus 40, but the sled dog is not going to break down. They might get hungry, but they're going to continue functioning. But a snowmobile might not. And what are you going to do if you can't fix it out there at minus 40? Okay, so my dad encouraged them to keep their sled dogs. But here was this story, this modern Canadian story, where they were being compensated for slaughter of sled dogs. Now, here was my dad encouraged them. So this evil white man, right, encouraging them to stick with their old lifestyle. But somehow, the story was the white man slaughtered their sled dogs in order to destroy their way of life. Okay, so precisely opposite. They were wanting to buy these snowmobiles and modernize. The white man there was trying to encourage them to stick with their old ways because they were good. They had served them well for a long time, right? So that's just one story. But I think you wanted to ask something.
Eddie? Oh, you don't bet me. Oh, no, I was just, but I do know, well, not like you do, but I do know a thing or two about those sled dogs. And when I used to be a prolific reader, when I believe it or not, when I was a kid, sometimes I read two books a day back in the day. But and with Jack London, you know, the great writer. But those sled dogs, what I've heard, you're right, they're not your family pet. And I've read stories about where people did have to eat their dogs. In fact, there was a real life expedition in the Antarctica where the people, they had to wind up eating their dogs. They yeah. still starved to death. But you know, I just like to comment here quickly. We talked about this earlier when I talked to you, and these people are enemy. And to coin the phrase to repeat the phrase you coined, the men that wear tiny little hats, they always turn everything around upside down, just like George Orwell said. I mean, about the dog story, a complete lie. About your dad being like Dr. Mengele, in real life, I'm sure I would be, it'd be an honor for me to be called Mengele. But they turn everything upside down. Yes. And it's just like, and you said, I said like George Orwell, like 1984, and you said 1984 on steroids. I mean, it's just so much BS. And no wonder the legacy media has lost so much credibility now. No wonder the Memphis commercial appeal has moved out of here. But, hey, Paul, is there anything you'd like to – did you like to ask Monica or anything? You've been hanging on a long time.
I think Monica was saying about dogs and then earlier about her father. We're seeing worked out the diabolical plan by that British Jew, Septon Delmer, who was – the dark architect of much of Britain's World War II anti-German propaganda, and he stated quite plainly some years after the war that we won the war by atrocity propaganda, but that's not the end. Unlike previous wars where, you know, after a few years, both sides admitted, well, they probably laid it on a little bit thick about what they said about the other side. That was the case after World War One, but not after World War Two. Delmer said that the propaganda would continue to demoralize the German people until they actually would just hate themselves and would want no longer to be proud of themselves or proud to be German. The defamation, or the, you wouldn't call it that, but the propaganda, the demoralization, and that's all it was. It didn't have to be based on truth. You just concoct the most stomach-churning lies, as they did in the First World War, about the German soldiers raping nuns and bayoneting babies in Belgium, and that was all admitted after the war to be false. We in Canada can't talk about the truth or falsity of the Holocaust story, because it's now the state religion, and just like you, you can't pee on Al's beard, you can't question this religious faith. But nonetheless, there are other things that have nothing to do with the so-called Holocaust that are lies, and Mengele certainly was a lie. What was said about Monica's father's a lie. but it's all part of the same program of endless attack and demoralization and dehumanization of the German people long after the Second World War. Monica's father had nothing to do with World War II. His career was all in Canada. And it's egregious that a man who was so good to the Eskimos, to the Native people, is so defamed. I mean, this is egregious. I hope there's something she can do to get some retracting. I'm pessimistic,
Did I mention to you that the author of the book, Elaine Duar, happens to be a Jewish woman who is one generation removed from Holocaust survivors? That's what they introduced her as.
I was certain that the author must have been a Ubangi from Central Africa.
We got to go to a quick break, y'all.
Okay.
We got to go to our last break. When we come back, Paul, you hit on something that's absolutely key. Must be repeated over and over and over and over and over. Be right back, folks.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Dear Blood River Radio family, Brother Paul has hit upon something. It's key. It's absolutely key. He said, and we're going to get him to repeat it, and Sister Monica talk about a person who did this book. But Paul said, and I can't remember the Jew that put it out there.
Sefton that Delmer.
They won. Oh, repeat that name, Sister Monica.
Sefton Delmer, the black propaganda minister of the UK of Britain during the war.
He said, "And that propaganda. They won the war through propaganda." I'm here, and I'm going to say this. It just dawned on me: there probably never would have been a First and Second World War in Korea, especially World War One, World War Two, without the propaganda. Without propaganda, you would not have had these brain dead been signing up for the Army and the Navy in First World War, Second World War. And Paul said that the propaganda, our superior technology are overwhelming numbers. There would not have been superior technology. There would have been no overwhelming numbers without the propaganda, because there would have been no numbers. People wouldn't be signing up to go fight a damn lie. I'm going to shut up and go back to you, Sister Monica.
Well, okay. I just need to tell you the full title of that book. I only told you it was called Oblivious, but I'm going to give you the full title because there's a subtitle here. Oblivious, : residential schools, segregated hospitals, and the use of indigenous peoples as slaves of race science. So imagine her, yes, Paul, you say this is German bashing, but in this case, it was just so utterly convenient for Elaine Duar, the descendant of Holocaust survivors, quote unquote, that it turns out that Dr. Otto Schaefer came from Germany, and then she did all this research to find out, oh, he studied at Heidelberg University, and according to her, that was the most Nazified university in Germany, and all this stuff about about hygiene. And she said, well, that's just racist. It's racist stuff. So if part of the title of her book, really, we've been talking about residential schools because they are accusing us of genociding the natives at these residential schools, using a pack of lies with that. And then talking about these hospitals, like, I guess it was just an evil thing to have segregated hospitals. I'm not quite sure why. And, there was a lot of TB. And I would say that maybe it was nice for some of these patients to be among other people that would speak their language, don't you think? I don't know. Just that occurred to me. And then the last part of that subtitle was the use of indigenous peoples as slaves of race science. Oh, my goodness. That just evokes, Joseph Mengele all over it, right? Over to you, or back to Paul, maybe, because we really haven't let Paul talk much.
Yes.
This is the part of the defamation of Canadians. We have a full-blown propaganda through many of our universities and from the federal government and some provincial governments, denigrating our entire past. Everything in our past was either racism or anti-Semitism or colonialism, and we never did a good thing. We were trying to destroy the native people. Every bit of that is just a festering lie. Our first prime minister, Sir John A. Macdonald, sent food to the Indians on the prairies after the buffalo herds were decimated because they were starving. If he wanted to get rid of it, benign neglect, let them starve or let them eat rabbits or something like that. We've not been perfect, but we have a proud history of caring for the native people. In a nutshell, the residential schools were a solution, maybe imperfect, to a problem. What do we do, especially in Western Canada, with nomadic people who are in the Stone Age? We're on the edge of the 20th century, from about 1880 on. What do we do with these people? Well, you could simply benign neglect. Well, look, a lot of them continue fishing.
Or Paul, don't you think that maybe if some other group of people had come here, they might have just wiped them out and not been quite so kind, right?
Oh, I knew a former Chilean diplomat. And that was many years ago, and we had him as a speaker, and I said, "Well, you never hear very much about the Indians in Chile. You hear about them in Bolivia, Brazil, and so on." And he said, "Well, there used to be Indians," and then he sort of grinned and said, "But there aren't any anymore." Look, I shouldn't laugh, but you're quite right. Many other people took a different approach, whereas our government, beginning in 1880, said, well, we've got to do something that try to bridge the Stone Age with the modern age. And so they grouped the children, and I think usually it was voluntary, but grouped them together into residential schools because it was impossible to have a school in every tiny community. And many Indians, when this issue first came up, said that, sure, it was tough being away from your family for 9 months of the year. And yeah, as it would be if you were sent to boarding school as a white person. But people like a prominent Canadian Indian actor and playwright, Thompson Highway, said, If it hadn't been for the residential school, he would not have gotten the education that enabled him to write plays and be an actor. It was not a plan for genocide. It was a plan to help them integrate into the beginnings of a modern society.
And Paul. What do you think about the fact that when they were being shut down in the 60s and 70s and 80s and the last one in, I think, 1994, many of these schools, the local bands, the local Indian people would lobby the government to keep them open. And in some cases, the Indians basically did keep them open and carry on where, you know, the government or church was no longer running the school. Isn't that the how it went?
Yeah, and now there's some people by way of the ideology believe we live on stolen land. That's the ideology of the ruling party in British Columbia, the New Democratic Party, and I think this has to be challenged aggressively.
Yes,
I would say anybody that says that, and I said that recently on Facebook, replying to some idiot here in Hamilton. And I said, if you really believe that, if this isn't just self-aggrandizing masturbation, if you really believe that, then why don't you turn over the deed to your home, or if you don't own a home, then empty your bank account and give it to the local Indian band, because you're living on stolen land, and you take yourself back to whatever European country your ancestors came from. Come on.
Bingo. Bingo.
Really
there are, unfortunately, there are some white women, I haven't heard of any men doing this, but white women who are trying to get people to do that. I have heard about this happening. Like, come on, give away your money. Like, give it to the natives. We got to equalize our, you know, bring us down and bring them up. And anyway, it's quite ridiculous.
As long as they follow up by leaving the country. These are whites who are so morally depraved. So without the life force, we'd be better off without them. And I pity any European country who'd have to take them back. But these people are rotten to the core. And, you know, if you hate yourself that much, why don't you just do the righteous thing and go up on a cliff and throw yourself into the lake or something?
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, this is all the result of the Orwellian re-education that has been happening primarily since, you know, it's been escalating since World War II. And that comes from this, you know, the Jewish school books, the Jewish universities. I mean, we have been all the institutions of higher learning, you could say, and the media, the mainstream media has all been captured. So, hate to say it, but that is the way it is. It's very Orwellian that we've just been so programmed and, you know, basically in misled to be, they've taken all our good qualities of empathy and turned it against us, and we feel guilty about everything. And then they've taken our good qualities of being high trust and they turn it against us by telling us lies and we believe it. So what a combination that is, you know, that
I'm going to promote a new book by, I'm going to promote a new book by a Jew, and he's a Lebanese Jew who taught in Canada for many years. His name is Gad, G-A-D, Saad, S-A-A-D. It's called Suicidal Empathy. And it exactly describes this illness. Empathy is a great thing among your own people. You know, otherwise we wouldn't care if we saw a little child lost and crying. But when we prefer others to ourselves, as we do now, in the United States, you've got these crazy Democrats that give more.
We've run completely out of time. It's been great having you two on. It's been great having you on, Sister Mike or Brother Paul. Yes, we did. We had to transition to the third hour and bring in the one and only Bitter Ender, Gene Andrews. But thank you
very much, Eddie. It's been my pleasure. And thank you, Paul, for being there.
Stay in touch, Sister Mike. Stay in touch, Paul. God bless you. I'll be in touch with you. We'll have to get you back on again soon, like we talked about, Sister Monica. Thank you, Paul. Good night. Good night, y'all. Have a good rest of the night. Dear Blood River Radio family, we're transitioning to the second hour. Excuse me, the third hour. Now we're going to bring on Gene Andrews and get some coffee. Got a good long break here. Be right back in about 4 or 5 minutes, folks.